Welcome to the Music Career Show, telling you the stories of the world's best professional musicians.
Hello there and welcome to the Music Career Show. My name is Barry and every week I'll be speaking with incredible musicians from all over the world about how they've honed their craft and made a career out of doing what they love the most. If you're a new listener, then while you still have your device in your hand, please take a second to subscribe and tell your friends all about the Music Career Show. Hello there and welcome back to the Music Career Show. My guest today is the founder of Big Universe Music, which is a 100% online music school. In the very short time that I've known her and been aware of her online school, her fan base has grown by over 12,000, which is absolutely outstanding. Aside from that, she is a singer, a songwriter, a performer, as well as being an outstanding teacher and businesswoman. So today I'm buzzing to have with me Melissa Wright. Good morning, Melissa.
Good morning.
How are you getting on? Are you well?
Very well. Thank you for having me.
Oh, it's an absolute delight and a pleasure to have you. Whereabouts in the world are you?
I am in the United States in West Virginia.
In West Virginia. I honestly didn't know there was a place called West Virginia until I actually went to West Virginia. And I was like, oh my God, it's not just in the song. Whereabouts in West Virginia?
Yes, it's a real place.
Whereabouts in West Virginia?
I'm in Harper's Ferry, which is presumably what the song is actually written about. So.
Is it really?
Yeah.
No way. Is it really? I didn't know.
Mm-hmm. Blue Ridge Mountains, Shenandoah River. It's the only place that you have both. Sean Denver was in D.C. I'm about an hour or two west of D.C.
Right.
And John Denver was in D.C. performing. And I think the songwriter was, who was he sitting with? One of the, some other songwriter. I want to say John Carroll, but that could be wrong. John Carroll's in like a, was in a band called the Starland Vocal Band and lives in D.C. But anyway, and they were just writing and just started kind of singing about Harper's Ferry, and they came up with a song. And apparently, John Denver had actually never been to West Virginia when he wrote the song.
No way! I cannot believe that's my mind absolutely blown. Because I spent loads of time in DC in Virginia. I was gigging there in about 10 years ago, and lovely part of the world. Virginia, especially is. Or maybe was it just Virginia or West? That whole part of the world is lovely anyway. And yeah. Now I know where what that song is about. I love it.
That's cool. You were in DC.
Yeah, I was in DC in 2014 twice on three or four occasions, actually, in fairness, playing in. Were you familiar with DC?
Pretty familiar with like the music scene there. Yeah.
Do you know Re-Raw? It's not there anymore. It was an Irish pub on M Street.
No.
Okay.
I don't know that one.
Well, that was where I was gigging. So. Anyway,
cool.
Yeah,
that's awesome.
It was class. We met the Foo Fighters. The Foo Fighters came in for a pint, and we met them. We drank pints with them all night. It was cool as fuck. It was
there. You go.
So cool. But anyway, we digress. We're not here to talk about how cool my rock star friends are. Anyway,
we're here to talk about how cool my rock star friends
exactly
are.
Mundo. Exactly. And there's lads writing songs about where you're from, and there's definitely no one writing songs about where I'm from. So. Let's get back to you. So, Melissa, for the listener or the viewer who is in meeting you for the first time, why don't you introduce yourself and tell them who you are, what you're about, and all that jazz?
All right. My name is Melissa. I am a teaching artist and founder of an online music school called Big Universe Music, where I teach through short video lessons and then an online course and meet people on Zoom. And I have a team of about 7 other teachers who do the same behind the scenes. You know, I'm mostly the one on camera doing the YouTube and the Facebook and the TikTok stuff. So, that's kind of the short of it, what I'm doing right now.
I love it. I love it. And all that coming from Harper's Ferry, where Country Roads is based on. That's amazing. So let's reverse back then and find out. So where did music start for you?
Let's see. I started, I like to put this in my biography about how I found my parents' record collection in the attic, and it had, you know, all classic rock. My dad was really into classic rock, and you know, my mom was really into ABBA and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So I just was fascinated by the records. My grandmother also was a songwriter, musician. She was a children's musician.
Oh, lovely.
Yeah. So she had some of her records in there too. And I still have all of these records, but when I was 12, I asked for a record player for my birthday, and I was always really into, you know, sitting and listening to CDs in my room with the door closed, like every musician starts,
really?
I think.
Yeah, absolutely.
From there, I just started being obsessed. I played in bands, you know, around where I'm from. It was a lot of like traditional music. So bluegrass, old time music, folk. I really wanted to be in a punk band, but at that time in the country where I was growing up, it wasn't cool to have a girl in a punk band. So I started a bluegrass band, and I led that band for 10 years and took me to music school and touring around mostly just the eastern east coast of the U.S. And then I started teaching lessons after college, to make ends meet. And funny, because I kind of always thought of it as just being like something I would do on the side of performing to pay the bills, you know. Later on, started working for a music studio, got hired as a marketing director because I had a music business degree from college, and was teaching lessons, marketing for a national brand of music schools. And then the pandemic hit. I got laid off from my somewhat cushy, not really, but at the time I thought it was cushy job, yeah. Marketing. And I was like, you know what? I'm a marketer and a musician and a music teacher. I can do this for myself. And so I just Googled where to post online lessons for musicians. And it was during the pandemic. So it just like, I put up my ad and started running. And my school, I taught like 3,000 students before I hired other people. Yeah. A lot of them were one time, like we would meet one time, you know, in group classes and workshops and stuff. And a lot of them are still with me now from 2020. We're like 3,000 and 3,000 one-on-one, or eye to eye, I will say, not one-on-one, just started working on my social media to branch out beyond the platform I was using. And as you said in the intro, since April, it kind of started taking off. So having fun spreading music.
That's class. Well, I checked this morning just before I was doing up the script, and you're at 26,000. I think when I first met you, you were at like not even 14,000, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah, I feel like you sent me a message a couple weeks ago and you're like, since last time I checked, you gained like 8,000 followers.
Yes. It's mind-boggling how quick. And now, of course, as we all know, likes is more of a vanity metric. However, there is so much to be said for the amount of clout and the amount of like kind of validity that amount of a following gives you. So as much, do you know what I mean? So as much as it is like, likes don't equal money to an extent, like that's still, it's so, so impressive. So impressive.
Thank you. Yeah. I always say this about like my performing friends. It's like there's really just like this fine line between, a famous person and a local musician. And it has nothing to do with talent. Anybody can do what I'm doing, I think. I don't know if anybody would go through what I've done to do it.
So
there's that. But if anybody's like watching and wondering, I think anybody can do what I've done. But it's just alchemy, putting all the pieces together. And it's been fun to watch it happen. Because from being in a position for a few years where I really wanted it to happen, and working toward it, and finally to see those numbers start kind of going up and connecting with people who find it meaningful to them, it's been really awesome.
Yeah, it's amazing. It's amazing. I can't wait to get stuck into all of that good stuff. Let's reverse back a little bit. And you mentioned there at the start that you started listening to some of like your parents' albums. I was exactly the same. For me, it was my mom was into ABBA in Chicago, and my dad was into like Bob Seger, Bryan Adams, Bon Jovi, all the Bees. What were some of those first classic albums you were listening to?
Oh, well, I really, Bob Seger, Against the Wind.
Oh, stop.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That album, amazing. Mm-hmm. There was a record that I really, really played a lot that was it's a jazz record, the trombonist Rico from Blue Note Records. I played that. That was kind of one that just, I think it was probably my mom's because she played trombone. So someone was probably like, here, trombone player. But I'm obsessed with that. I still play it on road trips, that record, through my poorly designed car stereo setup. Let's see, Rico. I really love Zeppelin. So I have like Zeppelin 1, 2, 3, Zosin, all those, Stairway to Heaven.
Mm-hmm.
Who else? I became a big Patsy Cline fan. Patsy Cline is from the area that I'm, so I actually do kind of like a cover band series of Patsy Cline songs. So Patsy Cline, I have a record of hers that I played over and over again. Yeah.
Very good. There's nobody, there's absolutely nobody of any real interest that's from my part of the world at all. It makes me...
What? No. That's probably not true.
Well, Barack Obama is kind of from the same part of the world as me-ish. I know it's a bit of a it's a,
well wait, Ireland?
Yeah, specifically County Offaly where I'm from. So County Offaly is in the middle of it's in the middle of Ireland, in the middle of the Republic. So people outside of Ireland tend to view Ireland as like north and south, and it's not that way in any way, shape or form. There are 32 counties on the island of Ireland, 6 of which are in our Northern Ireland and the remaining 26 are the Republic of Ireland. Anyway, that's a brief geography and history lesson over and number. I'm from right in the middle of the Republic. It's called County Offaly. And back in 2010, I think it was 2010 when Barack Obama came to Ireland, he traced his Irish heritage back to a place called Moneygall, County Offaly. Now, it's about an hour away from where I am, but it is still County Offaly all the same. And there's a very famous picture of him in it's some sort of cousin or some sort of his closest relation in Ireland anyway. And he's in their pub and he's got a pint of Guinness. He's like, and it's really, really famous. So there you go.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So yeah. Barack Obama, maybe.
Barack Obama. Well, you got to look up all the like traditional folk heroes in your area. You know,
you do in fairness. Yeah. So I'm more than happy to claim I will Barry Obama. It's like, in fairness, it's just one apostrophe away from being Irish. It's like, oh, apostrophe Bama. Do you know what I mean? And if you call him Barry Obama, there you go. Sorted.
Done. You're basically the president.
Basically,
the United States.
Do you know what I mean? Basically.
I think there are a lot of people and probably musicians who live in this area who don't realize the musical history. I'm a little bit of we'll say ethnomusicology. Like, that's kind of one of my things. I love like local music scenes, small, you know, like I love like DIY culture. Uh-huh. So I like to be, I listen to, nowadays I would listen to someone who I met who plays music nearby more often than I go on Spotify and listen to new artists.
Oh, that's great.
So don't worry about not knowing around your...
I see. Yeah, I am the total opposite. For someone who likes to be involved in everything to do with music in my local area, I don't listen to anything that's post 1991, 92. Do you know what I mean? I still listen to the same Van Halen albums, to the same Bon Jovi, to the same Metallica. Do you know what I mean? Like all of my students that I teach, yesterday we were doing For Whom the Bell Tolls, which came out 7, 6, 8 years before I was even born. So like,
right.
Yeah. But so you mentioned there that when you were in school, you started bands and all that. And it sounds like you had a fairly average musical upbringing, the same as most of the rest of us. When you were learning music initially, did you get lessons yourself or did you teach yourself? How did that happen?
I did not get lessons. I played in bands in middle school, band in school. And then in high school, started going to jams, bluegrass jams, like once a month or whatever. And learned just jams is how I learned. So like I was relatively self-taught on the guitar.
Yeah.
No lessons. I actually think at that time growing up, like I said, I'm kind of grew up in a rural area. It's less rural now, more suburban, as things have changed, really? But there was not a music school anywhere that we could have driven to. Maybe it would have been at least an hour to drive. Yeah. So that's another thing that's given me a little bit of more belief in online lessons, because this wasn't available to me growing up. And I think that it would have been something I would have done.
You would have done. Well, there's one for you now, because I'm exactly the same. I never had, I had a grand total of 6 lessons when I was a kid because my dad wouldn't get me an electric guitar until I'd had some lessons. And that was it. But I also run a music school. Up until a couple of months, I had 6 or 7 tutors working for me as well, same as you. And I don't know how you feel about this. Now, you've obviously gone on to do more kind of, you're more qualified than I am, but I don't know how you feel about this. But like, I always used to feel almost like very self-conscious of the fact that like everyone that was working for me was more qualified than I was, because they were all like classically taught, classically trained. And I still always, if I had any sort of reservations about what I'm doing, is that I've, for lack of a better term, made this all up myself and just figured it all out myself. You know what I mean? That's how I feel sometimes when I'm trying to impart this wisdom onto the next generation, that I'm like, I hope to God that this, I hope I'm telling them the right thing, because I've kind of, do you ever feel like that?
Well, I did go to music school for college. I guess, so technically I can't totally relate to what you're saying in that sense, but yeah. I do know what you mean when you say it feels like you're making everything up every day.
Okay. I'm glad.
So no, a degree or a conservatory does not fix it.
Okay, good. Well, I'm glad. Good. I'm glad I didn't waste my time going and getting a degree. So.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that like as a music school owner, there's things that I do that even people who are extremely, like, by outside perspective, more talented than me, naturally talented, that they can't do. Like just simple things, maybe like coordinating a time to meet. So I just remind myself that they need people like you, you know, who are skilled in that way, because, and that's how we work together to have a successful business, right? Like I need them to help me to teach the world music, and they need me to help them acquire students.
There you go. That's lovely. That's absolutely fantastic.
And you can always take lessons. If you want.
Exactly. You can always take lessons. I don't need lessons because I know everything anyway. So it's all good.
Yeah. Exactly. that's what all the people online tell me too. They're like, you suck.
Do you get
lessons? You shouldn't teach lessons. Oh yeah. Well, that's one of the funny things about a double-edged sword.
Yeah.
But I'm kind of like a funny person, so I just laugh it off. The comments are hilarious.
I was literally editing a podcast just before, another episode of the podcast just before I came on here with you. And we were talking about this a lot, about how often this topic is coming up on the podcast and how often I'm actually talking with people about it. And I'm talking about it far too often that people are getting hate. And this is like the third time I brought this up, like Ben Cody. It's Ben's birthday today, actually. Ben, if you're listening, happy birthday. I was recording this on your birthday. Ben Cody is if you don't know him, he's on TikTok. He's like, he plays loads of Van Halen and stuff. And me and him are like,
cool.
So we had great crack when he was on the podcast. But he was saying that he knows a video has hit its mark when he starts getting the hate comments. And I says, that is just, are you the same?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's terrible. Mm-hmm. Oh, and what sorts of comment? Like, so another girl that was on, called Emma Taylor. Hi, Emma. She said we had a good chat about some of the funnier ones that she's gotten. Now, she's a drummer and she's also a female. So you can imagine the kind of comments people will leave. Do you get any sort of like funny, cringy ones, or is it more just like your shit?
I mean, some people, I try not to argue with people anymore, but some people will just kind of get me going, because like I'm a music nerd, so like if they try to like question my theory, like I will fight for my music theory. Like that's one thing that will really get me kind of back and forth in the comments, defending, which is super nerdy, but hey, that's what I'm here for. Some of the funnier comments, like that are that stick out, let's see. Yesterday, they're like, your voice sounds like a bag of cats.
Okay, so grand.
So my new joy is just like mastering the response. And like I said, I'm funny. So for that, I just said meow back.
There you go.
And another one that sticks out as being like really hilarious to me is like, one time on YouTube, someone said, do you have that old filter on? Because you look old. And I said, no, I'm just actually old.
Oh,
but what? Those are the funnier ones I can think of. There's some others that, like I said, people just will like the in bands we used to always call it guitar guy. Guitar guy comes up after the show and is like, what kind of guitar do you have? Oh, well, I have a,
yeah,
you know, this type. And, you know, when you make that chord on G, you should really like try using your pinky on the third, whatever, you know, uh-huh. on the first string. And then when you sing, you should try to use more of like this kind of, and it's like, all right, guitar guy. Like,
yeah. Thanks very much. Yeah. We've had plenty of you. You can follow.
Yeah.
I hate those people. I absolutely hate those people. I always get people coming up and saying, oh, can I get up and sing? They'll come up and ask me to sing. And I'll say, why am I not doing a good enough job? And they're like, oh, no, you're great. It's like, yeah.
Can I get up and sing? Wow. Yeah, oh, man, I wish I had that confidence.
I know. And then they're like, yeah, but I'm really good. It's like, yeah, great. I'm sure you are. I'm not as good as you, but fuck off. It's my microphone. And it winds me up to no end. Absolutely winds me up to no end that people just do that. But I'm obviously,
see, I'm bad. When I get people like that, I'm like, yeah, $40.
Yeah, but if they're paying, no problem. Absolutely. But
like, yeah, you want.
Yeah. See, over in this end of the world, though, tipping isn't a thing. It's not a thing. And it makes me so sad. I spoke about this again months ago now at this stage that we were one time when we were over in DC, in fact. We were coming towards the end of the night, and this big group of people came in. It was like 20 of them, and they were like, oh, can you play whatever it was? I can't remember what it was. Zombie by the Cranberries or something. And we were like, oh, that was our last song. And they're like, no, you're not finished. How much to get you to play on for an extra hour or whatever? And my bandmate says $100, and then I says each. And sure enough, yeah, they put $200 straight into the bucket, and then they fucked off about 10 minutes later. I was like, that was the handiest 100 quid that either of us have ever made.
Maybe that's a DC thing. I was actually talking about that with someone yesterday. Growing up in the kind of somewhat of the DC area, like there's a lot of wealth there.
Uh-huh.
A lot of people have really great jobs. And, you know, in some ways, maybe that does kind of trickle into the artist economy where like, artists seem to be pretty used to asking for money in this area.
Mm.
And, you know, like doing business with other musicians, usually like how much you're getting paid. I don't know if this is how it is everywhere else in the world, but how much you're getting paid is like the first part of the question.
Really?
When someone asked me to do a gig. Yeah. So I don't know, maybe it's just because the government is here in the area. But that's sweet. Next time, ask for 400.
Oh yeah, 100%. No, we learned our lesson. We definitely learned our lesson at how quick the money came out. We were like, fuck, we're after being absolutely done here now. So we are. But yeah, no, you're right. There is so much money knocking around Georgetown. It is unbelievable. But yeah, some crack. But
nice of them to want to share it.
They're lovely of them to want to share it. Just, we used to do better out of the tips than we were actually getting paid. It was great. There you were, working away, working your way up through school, just finding your feet as a musician. You were going and doing like bluegrass jams and stuff like that. I'm so jealous of anyone that can play bluegrass, by the way, just as another little side note. Bluegrass is absolutely fucking class. And I'm so jealous of anyone that can play anything bluegrass to that level, because it's just so cool. But so like, were you ever going to be anything but a musician? What was your actual plan in life to do once you finished school? Were you going to go to college and do something other than music, or what was the crack?
I really always knew I wanted to be a musician. And I feel very lucky that I was just like, yeah, I just kind of like this. You know, I've always been kind of like, you know, just knew that I could do it and went for it. I've had other jobs in farming. So I've done a lot of farming work with like flower farms and working with horses and training horses.
Really?
Yeah. So I still work with horses a couple days a week, or one day a week, really, a couple days a week kind of.
Yeah.
So I liked that as well, but it's a lot of physical work and my body is not really liking that.
Yeah. I wouldn't do great now working with horses or any sort of animals at all now. I'm happy enough just coming out here to my little shed in my garden and talking to people on my telly. That's okay with me, right?
Yeah, it's something completely different.
Yeah.
We'll just say that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So what did you do after school then? Did you go to college straight away, or how did that work?
I did go to college straight after high school. And I went to Berklee College of Music in Boston.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You might have actually been in the same year as Ben, because he went to Berklee in Boston as well.
Oh, nice.
He's actually now the guitar head of guitar in Berklee, I think.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I'm always jealous of anyone that's gone to Berkeley, because that is such a flex. Actually, no, there's one. How did you manage to get into Berkeley if you were self-taught?
Yeah.
I mean this in I'm genuinely interested. This is not an accusation. Like, who the fuck do you think you are going into Berkeley? This is a genuine question. It didn't even occur to me.
And I attended on scholarship too. I don't have an answer.
That's amazing.
Thank you. Yeah. I think that maybe it has something to do with my songwriting.
Okay.
Because in the audition, I played original songs.
Right.
So I feel like that was maybe it. In addition to teaching, I also perform and write.
Uh-huh.
And I'm proud of my writing. So I think that I don't know. I can't explain it.
Well, congratulations. I tell you, that is, like I was saying, going to Berkeley is a flex. I thought Ben being head of guitar at his age was a flex. I think you've just overtaken that for that's well done. I genuinely mean that's phenomenal. Great. So you went to Berkeley. What was your experience like being a self-taught musician at Berkeley, being surrounded by all these like other world-class musicians in the making?
Well, the other thing that was really interesting about my choice when I auditioned for Berkeley is that I auditioned as a vocalist and I had never had a voice lesson.
Right.
Never. So I had grown up playing, you know, my technical instrument. I would have auditioned for other schools would have been trombone, because I played it in like jazz bands.
Yeah, yeah.
I did like my school band stuff. So what was my experience like at Berkeley? I loved it. I was in a hurry to go through and finish and get my degree because I was paying for it. So I did all my degree. I did my degree in 3 years. And I ran a double major actually in 3 years and just didn't finish my second major. I think I'm like 4 credits away from also having a vocal performance degree, but I have a music business degree.
Right.
Yeah. And I loved it. I also worked to pay as I was living there, like working through.
Yeah.
I worked on the stage crew at Berkeley. I feel like that. So your question was, how did I feel being self-taught? I didn't really notice. I'm like kind of ignorant to a lot of things.
Okay. Good.
I am just kind of like, wow.
Yeah.
This is really fun. And
because I genuinely applaud you, because I'm trying to relate back to how if I was in that situation, right? And anyone that knows me, I'm not a quiet person. I'm quite a confident person. I try to be as aware as possible of the things that I can do and the things that I can't do. But I think if I was in Berkeley, even if I was to go to Berkeley right now, having achieved everything that I've achieved, I think I would be an absolute disaster. I think I'd be an absolute nervous wreck, because I'd be so aware of how self-taught and how made up everything that I do is. Just because I know the caliber of musician that gets into Berkeley. So I was just, that was more of a question for me than anybody else. But no, that's absolutely. And you're a force to be reckoned with. That's amazing. So your music business degree, what did that entail?
As far as trading,
what sort of things are you now qualified to do?
Well, my degree is in music business management. So if I were to have pursued that directly, which I did kind of like try in my mind, I tried that route. I would be a manager, an artist manager. So I do that for myself. And yeah, I just always kind of had this vision of like taking those skills and applying it to other artists, to myself. I took classes in accounting, economics, leadership, managing bands, which was the professor of the management classes was really good. His name was Jeff Dornfeld. He managed Boston.
As in band. The band?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. And then I took, you know, just the professors there are incredible.
Yeah.
I took background vocal class from this lady who had been seeing Sting's touring background, like lead background vocalist for years and years.
Wow.
Yeah. So I took a whole bunch of songwriting, or I spent a lot of time working with Livingston Taylor as well, who's James, like he's James Taylor's brother, but also a great songwriter and performance coach.
Yeah.
I mean, it's worth it just to go and experience like the professors there.
Yeah, that does sound amazing.
Mm-hmm.
That does sound absolutely amazing. So it doesn't, the more listening to this, the more I kind of, it doesn't really matter what sort of name you put on your degree. You could be just you could have a degree in just musical experience and it count for just the same.
Exactly.
I think that's class. That's class. I'm going to go to Berkeley. Fuck it.
You can.
I'm going. I don't know how I'm going to. It's going to be a hell of a commute from Scotland, but fuck it, I'm going.
You'd probably get a scholarship.
I talked my way into it.
Yeah.
My Irish accent hasn't failed me so far in life. In 30 years, my Irish accent has never failed me. So,
yeah,
let's see how far it'll get me now. So before we get into the whole universe, that's a whole big topic in itself. There was a kind of a period you were saying before, in between college and in between like the pandemic and all that kind of jazz, where you were working as like marketing for another music school or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Talk to us about that. What was the crack there?
I was working for a school in the US called Bach to Rock, which is kind of, have you ever heard of School of Rock?
As in like, chillo, you've got a bass.
The movie, but the school.
Oh, the franchise. Yes, I have indeed. Yes.
So this would be like they consider themselves a, you know, Bach to Rock considered School of Rock like their main competition.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so it was that kind of model where like they were selling franchises and getting people into lessons and then funneling them into bands and then, you know,
really?
Using the bands to do events to bring in more students.
I like it.
So, yeah, I was the marketing director of 9 schools.
Cool.
Yeah, and they were all over the U.S. So we had a few in D.C., Maryland, and a couple in the Chicago area that opened when I was working for them.
That's random. Or is it? Was there any D.C., Maryland? That's roughly the same.
Lots of market research. Lots of market research.
Okay, grand business.
The opening a franchise. So we're opening a franchise, and the market research they're looking for a successful music school. Most the average income has to be over $100,000 in that area. And they are also researching like competition and spacing themselves away from other things. And then one little hint is that look for where Starbucks has opened, because Starbucks does so much market research of like areas that are up and coming, because Starbucks is a huge company and want to be in there. So like look for the Starbucks. Open near a Starbucks.
Do you know, right? Here's one.
Yeah,
for you.
There
are 2 Starbuckses out in the middle of nowhere, where about 10 minutes on either side of where I can go that way to one of them, I can go that way to the other one. And since they've opened about a few years ago, right, one of them has now got a McDonald's beside it. It's now got stuff getting built beside it as well. So does the other one. And they're out in the sticks, like, in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah.
Follow the Starbucks.
Yeah.
There's like 100% some sort of a tagline there. Because like, who follow? It was Jesus. The wise men follow the star. Follow the Starbucks.
Exactly. And you'll get your Starbucks.
Oh, gee, Tell you what. After this recording, you and me need to do something. I don't know what. But it's going to be like a Step Brothers style thing. It's going to be called Prestige Worldwide. And it's going to be something built off the back of follow the Starbucks, because you will get your Starbucks. Oh, stop it now.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, if that's one thing I've learned from being involved in opening. And also they were opening other franchises, not just the ones I were in charge of. So like, I think during the time I worked marketing for them for 2 years, 3 years, they opened like 8 schools or something. And some schools made it. Some schools seemed to struggle. So.
And was that just down to the caliber of the people that were opening these franchises?
Yeah, and also just like, again, with the alchemy, it's like the time of year that they present their grand opening, you know, like the other things going on. Like there's so many things that factor into what's going to be like a competition for you if you're marketing.
Mm.
And the, yeah. So opening a school, I mean, the build out, just experiencing all that has made me like not want to do it.
Oh yeah. Big style. Yeah. Yeah. That was kind of where I was leading, because like, as a huge big company, and your kind of main competition is School of Rock, which as a music teacher, I've been targeted with School of Rock ads and all that kind of crack. I'm very much aware of how to work. And for to be associated with such a big franchise and to not be able to ride out the pandemic to the point where you, as the marketing director for 9 of their locations, they couldn't afford to hold on to you. They were obviously doing something wrong. As big of a company, as big and class and cool as they thought they were, there was obviously something not working.
Yeah, I was making my salary was $30,000 a year.
Oh.
So it's not like I was, you know, they weren't really cutting that much, but they were just cutting, maybe they cut a few people on the bottom line, just as a, it would be like the equivalent of me like firing someone who I pay like $100 a week. Maybe.
Okay, fair enough.
I don't know. I mean, knowing the numbers a little bit, but I think that they just did it to make sure they would make it through, because they're a completely in-person model, which is funny. And this is one of the things that I hold on to as like one of my kind of like, they should have listened to me moments, which was 2 years or a year before, maybe 2 years before, they have these like company Christmas parties or whatever. And I was talking to the owner of the company. I was like, have you ever thought about doing online lessons?
Uh-huh.
And he says, no, we believe in in-person lessons. We believe that there has to be in-person lessons and online lessons. And so like, I just kept thinking about that, like, especially the day they fired me, I was like, that is hilarious.
Yeah.
Because I think that being open and being even so open that you're ahead of everything, like, that's going to save your business. It could save your business.
Yeah.
Just being so open-minded on how you run things, like, that you already know how to work it when the time comes where it's relevant.
Yeah, that was that to me translates into, I don't know what online lessons are, and I'm bigger than you, so I don't want to be seen to not know what that is. So I'm going to make up some sort of fake belief that I have and impose it on you, whether you like it or not. That's what that sounds like to me. And look at you now, and look at them now. You're laughing. You're absolutely laughing at them, having taught 3,000 students a half an hour after this action.
I'm not sure how they're doing, but hopefully they're still all right, because, you know, I still think it's good to have options for people who want to learn music.
It is. It's always good to have options, 100%. But as someone once said to me, that your business has to work for you first and foremost before your business can work for anybody else. In fact, it might have even been our good pal Johnny Wilson who said it. Mm-hmm. It's something he used the metaphor of, like, you know, the way when you're on a plane and they tell you to put your own mask on first, that sort of situation. Maybe it was Johnny, maybe it wasn't. How are you, Johnny, if you're listening? But yeah, okay. So you went through that. You learned what not to do. It's so, I had such a similar intro. I learned exactly what not to do during the pandemic, and I left a salaried job as a music teacher, as a regional manager, believe it or not, of, I don't know what region I was meant to be fucking managing, but
assistant
anyway.
Assistant region.
I highfalutin, really fancy title of, God knows, I worked for an absolute shower of gobshites. I don't mind saying that, because they are gobshites. Anyway, if they're listening, howie. They're not there anymore, and I am, so it's all good. Anyway, what was I saying? You moved on. You learned what not to do. You applied that. How did you start? What was day one of Big Universe Music like?
Day one. Well, first of all, the local art center here asked me to do something online on their Facebook page as like a Facebook Live lesson.
Cool.
And I was like, cool, I'll do a singing workshop. And I put together like a little curriculum, and I did Lean On Me for the song. And, you know, I couldn't see the other students, but people were like commenting, like, we're all crying. Like, this is amazing.
Aww.
Because, you know, they were like, it was like during COVID, and everybody was like, lean on me when you're not strong. So I was like, wow, this is really cool. I'm going to do a songwriting workshop, or excuse me, a singing workshop. So I made this class. I just, like I said, I Googled like where to list online classes for music teachers. And I found this website called OutSchool, which is, I think, kind of owned by the same people as Airbnb. So it's like a marketplace for teachers.
You've told me about that before, actually.
Yeah. And I was successful there and have more or less maintained that for the 3 years I've been on it. So yeah, that was what was next.
Cool.
Songwriting workshop. And the first day I got 10 people signed up for my class. And I was like, whoa, I just made more than in an hour than I used to make in like 2 or 3 days teaching. So yeah. I was like, I'm going to go all in. And I just opened like pretty much full availability, 7 days a week, 9 a.m. to 9 p.m.
Wow.
And just taught and taught and taught lessons and taught lessons and taught lessons like through the entire pandemic, to the point where I can honestly say I pretty much did not leave my house. And I wasn't going to anyway, but yeah. I didn't even notice there was a pandemic for the most part, besides the news, because I was like, this is the moment. This is my, this is the moment for this.
Well, it literally was like, this is another recurring topic that's pretty much been in every episode, nearly 50-ish episodes on of the podcast. It's like, I would not be doing this only for the pandemic. No, would I be doing this only for the pandemic. I would not have this little studio only for the fact that as a struggling self-employed musician, I got a load of grants and I was able to build this studio with the grant. Do you know what I mean? So, how long did it take you then? So you opened up 12 hours. Let me do some quick math. That's 84 hours worth of teaching a week that you opened up. That's mental. But for starters, did you ever manage to fill those 84 hours in a week?
I was getting up to a little bit above 40.
Still, okay, great, grand. That's a bit more manageable, to be fair. But
in class, and then I was spending a lot of time preparing curriculum, you know, trying to think about the future, you know, planning, communicating with students.
Recruiting more students, yeah. So how long did it take you then to go from day one, zero students, or day one, you had 10 students sign up for your songwriting class, to getting then fully booked and fully like kind of self-sustained?
Self-sustained. Let me see. My best month was, just look, because I know I had 1 month that I was teaching solo that I had 300 students, and that was February 2021.
You taught 300? So is this... Yeah, but this isn't like recurring weekly students.
Some of them were. I mean, I have a lot of group classes, so
right.
You know, yeah, yeah.
That's mad.
It was crazy.
Mental. At the moment, I've got like 43 students, I teach weekly, and that's the most that I've ever personally had. That's crazy.
So 43 in a week. Yeah, 300 was so like a lot of my group classes were sold out at 10. Plus people. So, you know, I do like 10 group classes a week. That's 100. And then smaller group classes, guitar. So I'd have like 4 in each class. And yeah, I don't know. Well, it was a lot.
Well, no, here's a practical question. I'm all about practical advice and help and stuff on this podcast. So a practical question about teaching groups online. And me and you have spoken about this before anyway, because this is something that I'm interested in myself. I just can't figure out how to do it. How do you do it? How do you do a group class? Well, for starters, in 2023, I'm still not entirely sure how to do a group class online. In 2020, I don't know how you managed to do a group class online when Zoom was still catching up with how to actually facilitate online lessons and all that kind of jazz. How did it work?
How did I get people to take the class, or how did I actually teach it?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes to all of the above.
So to get people into group classes, what I do is I try to sell it more as a social experience.
Mm-hmm.
So I would be like, hey, I'm, you know, and I usually kind of preface it with, I'm reducing my hours, my private lesson hours, and I really think that your student would get along with this other student who I teach. They're at the same level. I think they'd really love working together. Do you want to, it's going to cost you less money, and do you want to try a class and like see how it goes, and we'll find a time to meet with them? Because the cool thing is, if the time works for the people online, there's really no difference between having one person in a class and two people in a class. So I push them into like, you're still in a private lesson, but rather than having one person, you're having two people.
Yeah.
And it's someone that I've carefully chosen to meet with you. And then after that, I'm like, oh, let's bring this other person in. So then we grow up to three. Well, and then eventually four. And I kind of try to cap guitar at four people.
Mm-hmm. Okay, very good. And what about your like master classes and stuff like that? Well, I suppose that's a bit of a different thing altogether, isn't it?
Yeah, master classes and workshops, those are just kind of like promote.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Okay. Very cool.
And so how I do it is, as far as the structure of the class, it takes a little bit more lesson planning than a private lesson, because, you know, you go into a private lesson and normally it's kind of like, well, we'll see what they did for work for their practice. And then if they haven't done anything, then we don't move forward. Right. So in a group class, I kind of have to design, like, we always do a little bit of a warm up or like a chat, and then we'll do review of what we did last time. And usually I just like, we'll teach the concept again, just quickly kind of review it and then ask people to demonstrate. And then if people understand, we go forward to another concept or another song.
Okay. So it literally seems like I am making a mountain out of a molehill and just need to do it, because that's exactly the same format as I would follow for all of my lessons.
Exactly.
Okay, grand. So anybody
else? Try, if you're worried about it, try with two people first. And just, you know, it's more about when you're in private lessons, it's more, or group lessons. I think to me, it's more about the saving for the money for the parents, and the social part. So like, you know, those times in private lessons when there's downtime because maybe the student doesn't have endurance, can't play for the whole time, or like maybe they're just not into it that day.
Yeah.
And you're like, hello, let's keep going. That there's less pressure in a group lesson, because then they could just like say, they can have a little chat for 2 minutes and let everything sink in, what they learned, and then back at it. And also they get breaks when other people are playing.
Yeah.
So.
See, I totally agree. I literally just a couple of months ago changed my whole obviously my whole school is in person. And I changed my whole structure to, I don't offer individual lessons anymore. Everything is in a group of three. So, or a maximum of three. And just exactly like what you're saying, some kids, they doze off or they zone out. If they're in a group, they don't really get the option to zone out because someone is always doing something and they get little breaks and stuff. So it does really, really work. It's nice to know that it works exactly the same online. I just need to get the finger out and just start actually doing it. But I know that you have like a really clever way of actually growing your following, because there's no point, like, the long and short of it is that people still need to find you. People still need to discover you. People still need to know that you are the lad that's doing lessons online at this time, wherever you are in the world. So you've got a really interesting way of actually growing that following. I remember speaking to you about before, where you just like content. How did you arrive on that?
Well, I've always been a big Gary Vee fan.
Okay.
Do you know who that is?
I can't say I do.
So Gary Vaynerchuk, Gary Vee, he's a, I guess like a marketing genius. And he has a YouTube channel with just his philosophy, his techniques. And he has a book called Jab, 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 Right Hook. And to be fair, I actually haven't read the book, but I've listened to like hours and hours and hours and hours of Gary Vee content.
Okay.
So that's kind of where I started with my idea of just like giving. And then more recently, so yeah, that's kind of where the idea came from. And then I recently read this book that really helped me, a couple books. The 12-week year was amazing, of just like reduce your goals from 1 year goals to 12-week goals. Because a lot of us, it's kind of like the group lesson thing. Like a lot of us kind of snooze. We take time, we take breaks. It's like, don't take breaks. Create a plan that causes you to reach your goal with like within a shorter amount of time. Okay. So that kind of got me going. And then another book by Pat Flynn called Superfans. So just basically mastering creating community.
Yeah.
So that's where that I would credit all those creators and authors with my current techniques.
I love it. And then so like you absolutely blitz content. Like, do you know, I was feeling like I was leading into this question with I knew what the answer was, but like, do you know on average how many pieces of content you put out a day?
As far as reels?
As far as anything, because all my feed is Big Universe, like constantly.
So,
I feel like I see your face coming up in front of me more than like my family's, and they're just there.
Sorry.
Oh, no, be sorry at all. No, it's great.
Anywhere between zero, sometimes I take a day off, and five, maybe?
Yeah.
Six, sometimes. I reshare things often, too, where I'll just, like, go and what I've already made and just, like, post it again.
Mm-hmm.
So some of those are things I'm not always creating, but I do always try to do at least one new reel per day. So a new video every single day.
And are you doing this? Are you doing Monday's content on Monday? Are you literally just doing something and posting it? Doing something and posting it? Or do you do it like in batches?
I do it pretty much, you know, an hour before I post it.
Wow. You're flat out.
Yeah.
That's
thank you.
That's commitment. Well done.
Thanks.
I really try to do as much as I can. And it's the same. It's the usual excuse. It's like, oh, I don't have time. Well, you don't have time because you don't make time. Do you know what I mean? But I really do struggle to make the time and find the time a lot of the time. I feel like I've said the word time far too many times. Oh my God.
Well, the thing about time is that once it turns in your favor, so like the hard thing about content and I think digital marketing is that you're going to have a long while where the only thing you're investing time and you will not get anything back for a while.
Mm.
So you either do the time or you don't.
Simple as.
So if you want the result, you have to do the time because that's the only thing you can invest to make social media work.
Yeah.
Enough. Ads. I don't care what anybody says, like running ads, creating advertisements, it does not work compared to putting in the time to actually give a shit about the people online, like treating them like they're your friends. Like,
yeah.
That is, and part of that, you know, the, hey, how are you doing? You know, yeah. So what I was getting onto was once you feel the tide shift from putting in time to finally like seeing numbers and getting monetized, and then it just becomes part of my work.
So, yeah.
And it's less of a, oh, I have to go like make a reel because I know I should because I have this goal. So think of it like that. If you don't put the time in, it won't happen. But if you do, it will. With improvement.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
And then speaking of time then, how long did it take for you to actually feel the benefit of all the time you were putting in?
From social media?
Mm.
Different for different platforms. Like I'm still kind of struggling on YouTube. I have like 600 followers there. TikTok just happened this past week and I went from 400 to like 5,000 in a week.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And Facebook, I'll say I fully committed in April.
Of this month?
Of this year.
This year, sorry. April of this year. Okay. Grand.
So six months from to go from, gosh, I don't know. I think I had 70 followers.
On Facebook in April?
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure it was like 70, somewhere between 70 and 100 followers in April to 26. Today, 26,000 on Facebook, yeah.
Fucking hell. Jeez, yeah. I didn't realize it was that. I must have just met you just after that happened. Jesus, right. Okay, fair enough. So how did you manage to teach 3,000 students? Right. Like we said at the start, likes and follows don't equals money. However, how did you manage to teach 3,000 students with such a small following on your page? Do you know what I mean?
Through other platforms.
Oh, and like you were saying, like OutSchool and stuff like that.
Yeah. So I only recently started going into social media, going outside of that website.
Okay. Right. That makes sense.
Yeah. So I had kind of like, we'll say I had behind the scenes success before I like have started really pushing out. And part of the reason I'm pushing out is also because of the BAM Squad, Johnny Wilson's like just that kind of training where it's like, okay, I have to always be moving forward, looking for the next thing. You can't rely on just one type of thing.
100%.
Yeah.
100%. Okay. Good stuff. Right. That's so interesting. Right. Well, then there you go, lads. If you want to get 26,000 followers, it's going to take you 6 months. Start now. And in 6 months' time, you'll have 26,000 followers. 100% guaranteed.
Probably. So here's my two tips. I'll give you two tips.
Love it.
But of course, this is just what I did. So, yeah. Or maybe I'll give three tips. I don't know. We'll see how many tips I end up giving. So first of all, your lighting has to be good, but I don't think it really matters what you look like.
Okay.
Because I've experimented with like how I look, how I dress, how I do my hair. And my most successful reels are like kind of the ones where some, in my opinion, I look kind of sloppy. You have to be somewhere between, if you're sloppy, I think if you're sloppy, maybe deliberate sloppy looks good. Like,
okay.
Go full grunge.
Full grunge. That's a good way of putting it.
But just remember, it's a visual platform and this is marketing.
Yeah.
So it is a piece of marketing material. Mm-hmm. It is not like, it's not, you still have to put thought into how it looks. We'll say that.
Yeah.
Okay. So that, and then find out what times your content performs best when you post. So for me, that's not. I try to post at 9 a.m. and I try to post either at 7 p.m. or like 10 or 11 p.m. So think of like the times that you're sitting scrolling, looking at stuff, and just notice what you're doing and then post at those times.
Okay. See, I've seen over the years so many conflicting kind of arguments for both that, oh no, it doesn't matter what time, and oh no, it does matter what time. So you reckon that the time is, how did you figure out then what your times were? Did you use like a scheduler or what did you do?
I actually literally just did it and watched.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So I just like, you just notice over time as you're doing like three or four pieces of content a day. And I think that people who say it doesn't matter what time, I think that they're giving advice to people who aren't doing it yet.
Yeah.
So like if you're not doing it, and you're not doing four pieces of content a day, or you're not doing six a day, like it doesn't matter because the goal is that you just need to start doing it.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Once you start doing it and you're getting all these followers, it's like, okay, how do I actually make the most of what of my following? How do I get my content into their algorithm?
Okay. So, right.
Yeah.
Fair enough. Right. Well, then you heard it here, lads.
Just fucking do it.
Will you?
Exactly. Just do it. Was that all your question?
Okay. Yeah, that's phenomenal stuff. I feel like I'm learning more in this conversation than I ever have before, which is absolutely great. One question I had about...
Which is impressive considering you know everything already.
Exactly. Do you know what I mean? So there you go. Well done. So what then nowadays does a typical day look like for you? Because obviously you've got a full team of people to manage. You've got a full marketing schedule. You've got however many students that you teach. Mm-hmm. You've got a rake of horses that you need to go and horse. What does a typical day look like for you doing all of that?
All right. So usually I wake up in the morning, have coffee. While I'm doing coffee, I usually kind of like will, and this is all very just like, describe myself like a balloon. I'm just like floating around and like bumping into things most of the time, but I've like organized and minimized to the point where it actually works.
Okay.
Interesting.
One, I've never had that before, but okay.
Yeah. Just like minimizing my life to the point where like everything that I bump into is meaningful. So it's not disorganized, but organized chaos. So anyway, I wake up and, I usually will like check my emails, like check in with, I have an admin person who like answers emails for me for clients, students and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I check in there. I usually check my social media, like answer comments and stuff. And then if I have a video, like sometimes when I record, here's one thing I do. If I record two videos like the night before, I'll edit and post a video in the morning as well. So mm-hmm. I get my morning content post. And then I'm off to the farm. I usually spend like a while at the farm riding one or two horses or maybe more. But yeah. And then I come home and my classes are anywhere from Monday through Thursday. I teach class from around 4 to 10.
10 at night?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. That's late.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay.
So some days I have till 10. I think. No, I'm just one day I have a student that goes until 9:40. Okay, 9:30, not 10.
Yeah, fair enough. Yeah, yeah.
And then I get kind of like a second burst of energy around 9 p.m. And that's when I'll do a lot of my writing. Like I write blogs, curriculum, whatever's on my list to kind of work on.
Yeah, cool.
Yeah.
So then is the reason that you're working until 10, have you designed that or is that just how like, where your students are in the world?
The students that are late at night are on the east west coast of the US. So it's like 6 p.m.
Yeah. Okay, grand.
And so for example, if you wanted to teach someone in the US on a Saturday morning at 9 a.m., you would have to be teaching right now.
I wanted to teach someone at 9. Oh, if I wanted to teach. Yes. No, I've got you. Where I was going with this one was that you will definitely have thought of this, I'm sure. But have you ever thought about going the other way and trying to teach people in Ireland or people in France or people in, I don't know, Poland?
Oh, during the day. Yes. However, it's just kind of the way my schedule kind of panned out.
Okay.
And a lot of it is based around the activities that I like to do. I like waking up and going and doing something and also I'm working on like slowly cutting back how many students I take on over time organically. If anybody's watching this, don't freak out. To the point where hopefully I will just be, you know, not in classes anymore.
Fair enough. But don't worry, this won't be going out for another like 3 or 4 weeks. So like by then you'll have another like million followers. So you can easily just go and pick loads and you'll be fine. Good stuff. Great. And then one final question on the whole online school things. How do you manage a team that's completely remote? How does that work?
Sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't work. I had a teacher this past 2 weeks who just for some reason didn't show up to the same class 2 weeks in a row, even though they had confirmed it twice. Honestly, like I think that the hiring and firing part of this of online is even more important than in person, because I have to trust that these people are going to do their job.
Big time.
Like I cannot oversee what they're doing at all. So they have to be so independent that I don't have to manage them. So I think it works well as long as you get the right people, but it's definitely a challenge.
I can imagine when I had my team of folks, it was great. Like for 9 times out of 10, it was great because they were all, like you said, they were so capable of working independently. So they were all out mobile tutors. They were going to students' houses and stuff like that. And they were all more than capable of managing their own schedule and all that kind of crack. The issue for me was that there was one in particular, and with the best will in the world, he was fantastic, but the schedule was all over the place, meaning that everything that I had put in place for these students, like setting their times weekly and then setting up reminders to go out, they were all wrong because the tutor had went and changed everything and just wasn't showing up half the time and all this kind of crack. And that was hard enough to manage. And they were like in the same city as me. So I would imagine that if a problem does arise with a completely remote team, you've got tutors all over the States, haven't you?
Yeah.
Yeah. Like have you ever actually met any of your tutors in person, or is there any of them that you haven't met in person?
I haven't met most of them in person.
That's so weird, isn't it?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, maybe it's not as weird. And well, I suppose I can only think of like one or two people off the podcast that I've ever met in person. But like I said, it's not as weird. It's not really that weird nowadays, but still, yeah. Well, look, however you're doing it, you seem to be doing a great job, and I wish you all the best in it.
Thank you.
What's the next steps for you?
Well, I'm going to keep building up my, I'm going to keep trying to work on the following that I have. And I have a membership group that I just opened. So I'm trying to become like a course creator. And that's a whole other learning curve. So another 6 months working on that, I'm sure.
All right, and you'll have 26,000 people paying for your course.
Yeah, that would be nice. That'd be nice.
Nice.
I'm pricing that, you know, putting the right kind of content, figuring out how to keep everybody on track. And I think that I would love to keep my school, like my employees who want to keep teaching where they are, and rather than continue hiring and building my personnel there, I'm going to more focus on the infinitely scalable stuff, course, reels, you know, and then reduce my face-to-face time as much as possible.
Very good. Well, again, I wish you all the best of luck and best of success with that. And I'm sure you will absolutely smash it. Let's head
Thank
in.
You.
Well, you're very welcome. Let's head into a quick fire round before we finish up. As I said at the start, these are just silly questions, nothing to do with anything, just to end just for a bit of crack. So for starters, Are you a morning person or a night person?
Both.
Yes.
Okay. Cool about it.
What's your favorite book of all time?
Ooh. Like business book?
Book.
Just any book.
Any book. Any book.
Can we come back? Let's come back to that one.
Come back to that one. Okay, grand.
I don't know if you can tell by the books I referenced earlier, but I'm into books.
You are into books. Okay.
Nowadays, I'm more into audiobooks.
You're more into audiobooks. Is that what you said?
Nowadays.
Nowadays, I'm exactly the same. I can't remember the last time I actually read a book. Like read an actual, The Hobbit about 2 years ago was the last one actually physically read. Let's what's your favorite business book then?
Okay, my favorite business book. Well, I'm trying to think of something that'll be worthwhile for everybody.
No. They've gotten all of their content. They can fuck off now. This is just you. What is your personal favorite business book?
Oh no.
See, this is the thing. You're giving too much. You're far too much into the whole giving concept. You're too nice.
Yeah, I know.
Be selfish now. What's your favorite business
book? Be savage. Okay, I'll be savage. There's this book called Supernatural Strategies for Forming a Rock and Roll Group.
That's yes!
Like absolutely weird.
I love it.
And confusing. And it's like kind of a business book, but it's also like if business people had a really weird sense of humor.
I love it. There you go. That's the answer. Well done.
Supernatural Strategies for Forming a Rock and Roll Group. I think the guy's name is like Aldous something.
Snow?
I don't know.
No, Aldous Snow was, no, that was a very, very niche and poor attempt at a joke. Have you ever seen Getting to the Greek?
No.
Watch Getting to the Greek.
That's another weird thing about me. Okay, I'll throw this in there just because since we're talking about me today. I do not watch shows, TVs, or movies. So that's probably another thing that like keeps me going.
Or like at all.
At all.
Right.
I just don't have a subscription. I just don't have a subscription.
Okay, right. I've never come across one of you. That's a new one on me entirely. I don't think it's weird at all. I think that's just you. I couldn't live without like films. I can literally recite all three Lord of the Rings films from start to finish. Like from start to finish. Back to the Future, same thing. No problem. I don't think I could live without that. Like, okay, fair enough. So like, if I asked you about like, did you like, is this just a new thing or you never ever were into like TV or anything?
Never really. I mean, like I fell asleep in the movie theater during one of the Lord of the Rings. Like I actually fell asleep.
Oh God.
Yeah.
Have you ever read the Lord of the Rings then in that case?
I haven't. No.
Okay. Well, if you fell asleep during the film, my God, you're going to fall asleep during the books.
I tried.
Yeah, I think most people try and most people don't succeed. I never succeeded in reading The Lord of the Rings. I've listened to the audiobooks. Nowadays, what I do is I listen to the BBC dramatizations of The Lord of the Rings, which are phenomenal. It's like it's like a radio opera or something. Fucking class. Anyway,
wow.
Let's come. Yeah, one hobby you'd love to try in the future.
I'd love to try in the future.
Yeah.
Oh, like one hobby I would really get into. I live near like rivers, a couple rivers. And I really want to get into like kayaking and canoeing. And I just haven't bought a boat. And it's kind of like a time consuming hobby.
Yeah.
And I'm already, so like I'm into like being outside and.
Fair enough.
Being a balloon floating around outdoors.
I'm happy for you because I would be terrified of I'm terrified of water because I saw because I saw Jaws when I was a kid. I'm terrified of any sort of water.
See, this is problems that you don't have when you don't watch movies.
Well, actually, there you go.
I think that's actually probably partially why I don't like them, because I do like internalize the content so easily. Like, like scary movies I'll watch sometimes and I literally will not. It wrecks me.
You've not been I can't think of the word, like acclimatized to like scary film. I can't think of, there's a word. I cannot think of it. Anyway, doesn't matter. Okay.
Desensitized.
You've not been desensitized. So you probably think that like you would probably
real.
Be scared at like quite what other people would count as like mild things. That's okay. That's not a bad thing because, no, I'm terrified of water now because of Jaws. And, so I'll not...
There's no sharks in rivers, though.
So I'll not tell you that Jaws was based on a true story of a shark attacking people in a river.
Oh, I feel like I...
And I'm not...
It was probably not a great white shark. That was probably a bull shark.
Exactly. That's exactly what it was. Well done. You know your sharks.
Definitely know. Okay, so yeah, I do kind of get into like Discovery Channel. Like, I'm really into shows about like ancient Egypt and like things like that. So,
oh, famous for its sharks and rivers.
Exactly.
And kayak.
And kayaking, yeah. So hobbies, canoeing, ancient Egypt, sharks.
I totally forgot what you want the question even was. Right. Before we go any further and get any weirder, let's finish off on one question. What celebrity would you like to fight?
Would I like to fight? Like physical fight? I'm sorry that I'm asking for clarification on every question.
It's okay.
Because it really depends.
Yeah, no, you're gonna fight someone, you're gonna knock absolute fuck out of them.
Swift.
Yes. Do not like Taylor Swift, no?
Oh, no, I love Taylor Swift. I would just like to fight with her.
Yes, class. Do you know what? You're the first person to just go straight in with an answer without being like, oh, I don't really fight, or I'm going to try and think of someone I could take. And you're like, Taylor Swift? I'm like, fuck.
I feel like Taylor Swift would get it.
She would. You're not wrong. She definitely would.
Yeah.
Cool. Listen, Melissa, before we get ourselves into trouble, where can people find you online if they want to become the 27,000th person to follow you?
A Big Universe Music LLC.
Is that on everywhere? Facebook. On Facebook. What about TikTok, YouTube, all that jazz?
Yes, all of
Same.
Them.
Same crack. And what if someone wants to learn how to play guitar the Melissa way?
Just find me, send me a message. Or watch some of my reels or join my membership group.
Yay. Melissa, you're an absolute delight and a force of nature. Thanks very much for speaking to me this morning.
Thanks for having me.
That was the Music Career Show. Thank you for listening. Don't forget to subscribe, leave a review, and tell your friends about the Music Career Show.